Now back to In the Box on TSN 1200.
All right, 12:02, welcome back to it, live from the Marshes. It is the Saints Alumni Golf Tournament. Steve Lloyd taking you through it. Graham Creech is with us in spirit on the air, but also producing for us as well. Double duty back at 87 George Street. Let's go to the Gabriel Pizza Hotline here as it's lunchtime here. Oh, the food smells good. AJ, can you smell it from where you are? Can you smell it down the line? Aaron John is joining us en route to Montreal, getting set to call Little Red Blacks football tomorrow night. So, good afternoon now. It's 12:03. I can say that. How are you?
I'm good. How's what's on the menu today?
Oh, some sweet burgers. That's all I see. And everybody's going by, and the looks on their faces, oh, they look good, AJ. Might have to sample one a little bit. I'll tell you how it goes, okay? Because I know you're
good.
I know you're a foodie. We'll pass that information on to you.
Big decisions in the next 24 hours. There's three food halls in Montreal.
Ooh.
And they're all within a 10-minute walk of our hotel.
Okay.
We've always gone to Timeout Market, which is fantastic.
Okay.
I think there's about 18 different spots in there. Like, you know, there's a Haitian place.
Yeah, I've been there.
Barbecue, Vietnamese, pizza, burgers, whatever you want.
Yeah.
The La Centrale, which I'm going to try today, I think there's 25 spots here. So.
Okay.
Pretty excited.
Now, because Mr. Avery was a guest this morning.
He's driving right now.
Okay, Jeff. Now, you said that they asked you about this, and I'm just deferring to AJ. So that's happening? He's just trusting you. It's all you, and he's just going to follow your lead.
I trust him to drive, and he trusts me to pick the spots to eat.
All right,
the way
perfect.
It works. That's why we get along so well.
Perfect. Okay. All right. Before we get into, tomorrow night, so the CFL season got underway. In earnest with their first regular season game last night. Maybe just some thoughts on that, because I know we're watching the hockey, but you're paying attention to that as well. We got a Friday night game tonight, and then we got our game tomorrow here. So we're back, AJ, after a long it always seems long. It's not that long, but maybe it's because we've been talking to you, and I heard Jeff talking about it. You get into these preseason games, and you got like 83 guys in the lineup, and it's you know, it's tough to kind of see it at that stage, but how much, you know, are you enjoying? You're down to it now. It's like, this is the team. Let's go. And we'll see if, the home record's better this year and the record overall here. But hope springs eternal at the start of every season.
Yeah, excited about it. Watched a little bit last night, again, because of the hockey that took precedence. So I didn't watch the whole game, but Vernon Adams looked really good. Dominic Grimes has really turned himself into a top receiver in the league, and he had a couple of touchdown catches. And quite frankly, Calgary, who I thought, like when I was looking at teams this year, you think, okay, I kind of feel like Winnipeg's still the favorite, and Hamilton's probably the favorite in the East, and Toronto's got a really good roster if the quarterback play could be good, and Calgary and BC, and then kind of question marks beyond that. Calgary didn't look very good last night, and they're, of course, in Ottawa next week. So I feel like when you look at Ottawa, they've got a couple of home games. They've got a game in Montreal here tomorrow, and Montreal, most people seem to think they're going to be bottom of the East. Now, I'm not taking anything for granted when it comes to that. Want to see how tomorrow looks, but I think when I look at the first couple of weeks, you'd love 2-0, obviously, because then you start with a win against the divisional opponent, and you get that home win out of the way, and that means people don't have to talk about it again. But when you look at least the first 3 weeks with Montreal on the road, then Calgary here, then Edmonton here, you can see a realistic path to 2-1. Like last year, I think if they play anybody else other than Winnipeg the first 2 weeks of the season, they get at least a win. They should have got at least a win anyways, they outplayed the Bombers, certainly in the first game, and the second game was even. So it was a tough start to the season that way, and it's unfortunate. And again, it just snowballed downhill from there. I think this team's better, but they need to get off to a good start just so this group isn't saying, here we go again. I don't expect that to be the case. It's a different group. New head coach. I know he's been here since 2016, but you can really sense the stamp that Bob Dice has put on this team. New coordinators in Baron Miles and Kahari Jones. I mean, we had Kahari up in the booth yesterday when we were broadcasting live from TD Place. And man, what a great interview. What a great person. Just a positive guy. So it is a different group. And let's see if they can find a way to get off to a good start so that they can get the fans to start believing in them again. And I get it. Look, they've won 8 of their last 48 games. I can understand why fans would be questioning if this team's going to be any good. So it's up to this group to go out and show that they are going to be better and start to generate some positive momentum, not just for themselves, but in this city as well.
Yeah, you mentioned at the end there what I was going to get at next, but it seems like Bob Dice has really surrounded himself with a good staff, with obviously people that have had success both coaching but and playing in the league. How optimistic are you in terms of like how the entire staff looks heading into this season compared to maybe the last few?
I've said before, this is the best staff that they've had top to bottom since 2015 and 2016, when like everything just seemingly was in place. And then after 2016, you lost your assistant general manager, you lost Miles Gorrell, your Canadian scout. Brock Sunderlin, of course, was the assistant GM, and he went to Edmonton. After the 2017 season, you lost Travis Moore, Ike Charlton, and Brian Chu. So your offensive line coach, your receivers coach, and your DB coach, who we're all really good position coaches. Now you got a guy like Travis Moore back. So it felt like, and look, they went to the Grey Cup in 2018, but it just felt like there was something missing in terms of the coaching staff or management team. And now I feel like all the way up and down the lineup, we talk about in hockey all the time. Like if you're a number five defenseman and you're playing number 3 minutes, you're probably not going to look as good. And I think that's what they've been doing here. So, but in management, I mean, you got Sean Burke surrounded by, you know, Jeremy Snyder, who's been here since day one, and Brendan Tamman, who's got so much experience and has been a GM in the league and doesn't want to be a GM anymore. He's happy to do what he's doing. And Chad Hudson, who does a great job on the draft and has experience that way. And yeah, it's about the coordinators and Kahari Jones, who's been a head coach in this league, and Baron Miles. But you look at some of the position coaches, like Mike Fair. We had him on draft night, and this is a guy with over 20 years experience scouting in the NFL, coaching in the NFL, and, you know, just came up to the Canadian Football League last year, and boy, what a breath of fresh air he is. And you could see last year what the defensive line play looked like. It was as good as we've ever seen it here. And of course, Lorenzo Moulton certainly benefited from that, winning Defensive Player of the Year and setting a Red Blacks sack record. So I just feel like top to bottom, it's a stronger unit. And, you know, I think the players sense that as well. So we'll see if that pays off starting tomorrow in Montreal.
AJ Jakubek joining us from the road on his way to Montreal to as the Red Blacks would open the season against the Alouettes here. So in the preseason, because of they're really taking their time and easing Jeremiah Masoli back here, he's not going to be available the first couple weeks, and, you know, carrying more quarterbacks because two young quarterbacks played well. But this is Nick Arbuckle's team to start the season here, AJ. You know, how much will he benefit from his full camp here after being airlifted last season just because they needed bodies? And how do you think Nick Arbuckle has grasped the offense and how he'll fare the first couple games?
I think he's looked really good, and he looked great in preseason. He looked really good throughout camp. You could talk to players who worked with him in the off season that said he'd been looking good from that point on. There's no doubt he needs some stability in his career. And he's talked about that, how difficult it's been on his family, for his daughter just to make friends, going from Calgary to Ottawa to Toronto to Edmonton back to Ottawa. So you have to look at the life perspective first, and I think it's been difficult on him. I think he's comfortable in his situation. There's no doubt it helps just to be here from day one. It helps not to be airlifted into a situation where the team was desperate for a win, like when he was traded for last season. And I think he's comfortable in his role. So let's see what he can do. I think it really helps. The big key for me on offense is if this offensive line can stay healthy, it should be one of the best in the league. They prioritized that in the offseason, brought in Drew Desjarlais, who's one of the best linemen in the league, from his days in Winnipeg last year, spent time in the NFL before coming back, and the Red Blacks paid to get him. So did the year before to get Jacob Ruby, and they've got a couple of guys that they drafted last year in Zach Pelios and Cyril Hogan-Saint-Dol that they believe in tremendously. And I'm not even sure Pelios is going to be the guy there long term. We'll see. I mean, he's certainly going to be starting the season, and there's always going to be injuries. But from all accounts, the way Dante Bull has looked in limited looks, because he's coming off his broken leg from a year ago at Fresno State, the number one pick in the CFL draft. I think when he is back and healthy and ready to go, I have to think Dante Bull is going to be starting at tackle. So there might be room for Pelios elsewhere, being a sixth offensive lineman or whatever. I think they think highly enough of him. But to start the season, he's going to be the guy. So, but these guys look great in preseason. You looked at the first game, and the one thing you noticed was Nick Harbuckle had a lot of time, which was fantastic. If he's not running for his life, he's going to be able to do a lot more and go through his progression. So, really like what he can bring to the table with the people surrounding him. And again, just having someone like Kahari around him to guide him, a guy that's been through it as a quarterback, as a head coach, as an offensive coordinator, and just like everyone says, I mean, Nate Behar saying it earlier this week, he's just such a positive guy. Like, he's going to teach, he's going to correct, but he's going to do it in a different manner than you'd see from other coaches. And I think that could be refreshing. So hoping to see the best of Nick Arbuckle. His numbers against Montreal, I think it's 57 of 69 for 550 yards, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. So he's played well against the Alouettes, and we'll see if he can continue some of that strong play.
Did we lose AJ?
Still have you, AJ?
No, I'm here.
Where I was going to go next, there's been lots of excitement and talk surrounding the entire quarterback room. Assuming everyone stays healthy or gets healthy, do you know what the plan would be in terms of developing the young guys that seem to have obviously a bright future with the team deciding to keep 4 quarterbacks on the roster?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. I think a lot of people seem to think on the outside that they kept these guys around because of the situation. Obviously, you would need to keep 3 guys around anyways, given the situation with Jeremiah Masoli. But I can tell you, if Jeremiah was ready to go week one, they were keeping all 4 of these guys because they believe in them. You watched Toronto in preseason and you said, geez, like, the Argos look like they need a backup. Like, Chad Kelly looked pretty good, and that's going to be a question mark as well. Like, they've got a really good roster, maybe the best all-around roster in the Canadian Football League, offense and defense, but question marks at quarterback, because we'll see what Chad Kelly can bring, and he looked good in preseason, but I have question marks about Toronto beyond that. So, and there's a lot of teams that are looking for young quarterbacks. Ottawa's never been able to develop a young quarterback, and the fact that they look like they've got 2 that they might be able to develop here in Tyree Adams and Dustin Crum, very encouraging. So we'll see what the plan is here. In the meantime, right now, they're number 2 and number 3, and Tyree Adams got quite a few reps as the number 2 quarterback does during the week. And I'm really encouraged because these guys look like bona fide Canadian Football League talents in terms of their skill set, being able to process things, arm strength, being able to take off with the football. I think Dustin Crum surprised a lot of people at how he could run the ball. And really, that shouldn't be a surprise given what we saw in his college career, where he's MAC Player of the Year at Kent State, and over 700 yards rushing in his last season. But these guys look like potential dual threat Canadian Football League style quarterbacks. So they're going to do their best to develop them and keep them around. But in terms of playing time, I mean, in a perfect world, there's not much, because in a perfect world, Jeremiah Masoli is healthy and ready to go after the bye week. And that moves Nick Arbuckle into the number two slot, and they keep learning and developing. But in a league where quarterback play has been an issue the last couple of years, and that's going to be a big story throughout the league this year, because the league's only as strong as your quarterbacks. You can get a lot of good play, defensive backs and receivers. There's a lot of positions where, you know, there's a lot of good football players, but quarterbacks, you know, in demand here, and with two other leagues, the XFL and the USFL, all holding, you know, three quarterbacks per, and they got eight teams per, so that's 48 quarterbacks that are not in the Canadian Football League that could be. So teams are going to have to mine smaller schools for that. You saw the three schools that the Argos, I mean, Chad Kelly, the starter from Ole Miss. Just because you're from a big school or a small school doesn't mean it's going to be, you're going to be good because you went to Auburn, or you're going to be no good because you went to a smaller school. But what we saw last week, it was Lindsey Wilson College, it was Occidental, and it was Tarleton State. That's where the three guys, two through four, were battling for the backup job for the Argos. Ottawa's got a couple of guys that at least played FCS football, which is just below FBS, the top level. So you had Western Carolina. Sorry, FBS, of course, Kent State is FBS. So one FBS and one FCS in Kent State and Western Carolina. And Crum comes with a pedigree again as MAC Player of the Year, and, you know, was cut by the Kansas City Chiefs. I do think it was a bit of a coup that he came up as early as he did and didn't test his options south of the border. He came up last year with this roster, so they want to ensure they keep these guys and give them to be that Red Blacks quarterback of the future.
All right, maybe last one for you, breaking up a little bit on us, AJ. Just on the quarterback theme and just the week one theme, it is interesting, right? It's a quarterback-driven league, and there's been a lot of flux with that. When you combine just experienced quarterbacks that are with new teams with quarterbacks that just don't have a ton of regular season reps behind them here, it's a very interesting league to see. You know, let's touch base again in like 5 or 6 weeks from now and see where we're really at. And with that, though, somebody with a ton of experience is Zach Collaros, and not just because of that, but I've yet to speak to anybody that doesn't believe that they still think that's the class of the league. And you're going to see Winnipeg and Hamilton tonight. Will you find a perch, you and Mr. Avery, to watch a bit of that here? And are you in agreement that if you had to pick a team, it's still Winnipeg in this league?
I'm still picking Winnipeg. Lee and I actually disagreed a little bit over that. I took the over on wins. I think the over-under was 12.5, and he took the under. He thinks they're getting a little bit older, and they are, but until I see them fall off the map, I'm not writing them off. They've got the coach, they've got the quarterback, they've got the veteran experience, and so I think Collaros is probably the only guy in the league that, at least quarterback-wise, that you wouldn't have question marks on. You know, Bo Levi Mitchell's got question marks. The guy that Calgary decided to go with, instead of Bo Levi Mitchell, Jake Mayer didn't look very good last night. Vernon Adams did, so that's certainly encouraging for them and the league. We'll see about Taylor Cornelius at Edmonton. I think Trevor Harris, you know, probably the safest bet. You know what you're going to get out of him, and he's going to be an upper echelon quarterback in this league. And then we'll see, you know, again, about the health of Jeremiah Masoli and what happens with Cody Fajardo, a guy that kind of came out of nowhere to be an MOP candidate, and he's fallen off the map again. So we'll see if he can reinvent his career in Montreal after some struggles towards the end in Saskatchewan. But no doubt, that's going to be one of the question marks in this league this year is quarterback play, because I think every team in the league has some sort of question mark, with the exception of Winnipeg and Zach Collaros, who, yeah, I mean, I don't think Collaros wows you like some of the guys we've had in the league in the last 10, 15 years that are going to be Hall of Famers, whether it's a Calvillo or a Ray or a Burris or even Bo Levi Mitchell in his prime. But he gets the job done. You know what you're getting. He's going to be solid, and he's got a real good group around him. So, it will be fascinating to see. And I want these quarterbacks to succeed, because the better the quarterback play, the better the league is. And seeing the way Vernon Adams Jr. played last night, I hope he brings that almost every other week, unless they're playing Ottawa, of course.
All right. Well, safe travels the rest of the way. Where are we at? Like Castleman, have you crossed into Quebec yet? Where are you?
Not Quebec yet. We're somewhere on the 417, though.
Okay. All right. Well, just let Jeff handle things here, okay? And you handle the food. You handle the food. He'll handle the driving.
We're like, of the three of us in the car, there's myself, there's Chris Hoffley, and there's Jeff Avery. Hoffley, of course, the PR guy for the Red Blacks. The best driver is driving, so that's the good thing. I'd like to say the second best driver is in the back seat, talking on the phone right now, but the best driver is definitely driving.
Who's okay? What's Hoff doing? Is he on music or what?
Yeah, what's his role?
He's just sitting in the front seat, trying to look busy, I guess.
He's just the eye candy on the road, is he?
he's doing some work. He's keeping us in check here. So all good.
All right. Well, safe travels the rest of the way. It's awesome. It's finally here. Can't wait for the first game tomorrow night with the Red Blacks and the Alouettes, and you and Jeff will have the call. Lee and Duke have a pregame at 5:30. Thanks, AJ.
You bet. Cheers, guys.
There's AJ Jackie back joining us from the road on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline, the official pizza of the Ottawa Senators, as we continue from the Sens Alumni Golf Tournament to benefit First Assist. I just saw John Chabot walk by. Of course, First Assist is his creation, does all kinds of great work, and the other group to benefit is Soldier On from the proceeds today from the Sens Alumni Golf Tournament, as we continue live from the Marshes. And we're back in a moment on In the Box on TSN 1200.
This is a throwdown, a showdown. Hell no, I can't slow down. It's going to go.
First now, man. Back to In the Box on TSN 1200.
Okay, party people in the house.
May I have attention, please?
In a moment, the beat will be played in many parts.
Come on,
many, many parts. Very.
All right, welcome back to it. In the Box on location at the Marshes, Sens Alumni Golf Tournament to benefit First Assist and Soldier On. Getting all kinds of different characters roll through here. And our next guest falls under the list here, so I just went through it here, our next guest. I'm counting, I think, 9, 10, if we stretch it, people I've worked with or have worked in the building down at 87 George Street. This is actually a Bell Media 1200 alumni event as well. So, hi, Vanner. How are you?
Good,
Sean
Steve.
Van Allen, head coach of the Carlton Ravens, and time to time, doing work with us over the years as well. How are you? So, like, how's the golf game first? Because you're a player. You're not like this donkey coming up behind you. He lies about how good he is, and that's Bosch. You can actually play. Where's the game at?
It's okay.
It's okay.
Yeah, it's okay. Driver's okay, but it's always better than Laurie Boschman's game. So
it's a low bar.
Yes, we're not setting it very high. That's for sure.
Okay.
But at least I can hang on to my phone.
It's just he's the same everywhere. It doesn't matter if it's pick up hockey or you're trying to talk and do an interview.
When you leave in 3 hours, you'll be looking for his car.
Yeah. All right. Well, you know what? It's been a while. Tell us about this the last season with the Carlton Ravens. And how many years have you been the head coach now as time flies?
Boy, oh boy, that's probably the hardest question you can ask me. I would say
Marty left when?
That's even harder. I would probably say it's been at least 5 or 6.
Yeah.
Yeah. It you know, COVID kind of messes everything up a little
bit.
Oh,
for sure, yeah.
But, it's going good. Most of our guys are coming back next year. We think a couple, two or three real good recruits coming in. So, we're still obviously working on a couple, and, we're looking forward to the season starting.
Have you seen recruiting kind of change in your time ever since another guy there, Brownie. Have you another guy? It's a 1200 reunion, Brad Brown. How much has recruiting changed since maybe when you first joined, when you were an assistant with Marty Johnson, and now you're the head coach? You've been at this a long time, and the hockey's gotten better and better over the
years,
sure
has,
right?
Yes.
Like, how many guys do you take? And it's not just about that, but they can come and often play major junior, so they're using their, they used to call them the schoolboy packages, whatever they call them now, and they get their education, and people are still scouting. And maybe you can go play East Coast League, and play in Europe here. Point is, this seems the hockey at that level is getting better and better, even just in the time you've been involved with it.
Oh, there's no question, yeah. And a lot of them, you know, they're trying to decide whether they want to go to the East Coast League, they're borderline AHL guys, or go to school. And, you know, we kind of say, like, you know, if you want to go to school later, it's going to be really hard.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Go to school now, try and get your degree, and then you can go on pro, and you can always come back. Because, you know, as you know, we can't play pro hockey forever, and pro hockey is really hard to do, and not everyone gets that chance. So that's what we want them to do, come get a good degree, mature a little bit. You know, you're on your own a little bit. I'm sure their parents see that after that first year when they come home, it's a lot different. They're not living with billets, and they're on their own. They're cooking their own meals. So it's a good life change for them.
Speaking with Sean Van Allen, I know you keep an eye on the Ottawa Senators as well, and the season that they had. How optimistic are you with the direction on the ice now? Is it's been a few years since making the playoffs, but made some strides this year.
Well, the one I like is I've only met him a couple times. Like Claude Giroux to me just looks like, you know, he's such an ultimate competitor, and you know he's mad at himself first if it doesn't go well, he wants it. And I feel that just has to rub off on everybody. And then you have Brady, who's an ultimate competitor too. But like when I watch Claude play, like he, you know, he shows he cares. He wants to win, and he wants the best out of himself. And when you want the best out of yourself, that's what a good leader does. And it starts with him, and then it flows from there.
What's it like, you know, the time that you played? Because I know you're a very competitive guy when you played as well. But like Claude Giroux, this is a guy, when he arrived, and this is such a young core, right? They looked up to him like they were playing video games when he was on the cover of the EA Sports game. It's Claude Giroux's on my team.
Exactly.
And then when you become his teammate, it's not just, oh, he's a great player, superstar player. It's like you talk about rubbing off. He gets mad, visibly mad, in a good way, right?
Yeah, I love that. and to me, I'm sure guys come in and they consider themselves competitive. And then you you measure it against a guy that's really competitive and has done it for a long time.
I wanted to win.
Yeah, at a high level. And then it's like your first year pro. You think you're in shape and you think all that. You're in junior shape. You're in junior mentality. You're in college mentality where you think you're competitive. But when you get to pro, it's such another higher level. And then you look at what he's done for such a long time. And, you know, you have to take your hat off to a guy like that. And I think that when he finally retires and moves on, I think that gives back to all those guys year after year. And I think he's, you know, he's a great addition to the team. I don't know, you know, at the time people were a little not sure. That just goes back and back. I just think that's a great addition for Ottawa.
All right, I won't keep you too long. I want to hold your group up here. So just generally speaking, I said this to Bosch and Yorkie came on earlier, just to be at an event like this. It happened last year, but this feels like, you know, we're back, you know what I mean, pandemic. What's it mean to be at an event like this and, you know, soldier on and John Chabot's first assist benefits from it? It's just it's a lot of fun, but it's just – having events like this is important for the community and important for the Sens alumni.
Well, for sure, and that's what the Sens alumni do. We give back. We try and give back to and help so many different people. And, you know, if you can help Soldier On and Johnny Chabot, it's like great organizations, and it's just nice to be back here. A great setting here at the Marshes. Get back and see some of the guys that you haven't seen for a long time. It's a nice reunion, but you're also helping two great charities.
All right. Good to see you.
Awesome to see you.
Okay. Go get it. All right.
Thank you.
You don't need the luck. He's a player, folks. This guy can play. He's not Bosch, right? Even Bosch will lie, but Vanner can actually play this game at a pretty high level here as well. All right, so we'll continue to chat with players as they roll through here. Speaking of golf, why don't I give you a quick leaderboard update? Adam Hadwin had himself a day. Adam Hadwin is in the house through two rounds now at the Canadian Open. He was 4 under today. He is 5 under for the tournament, and that is good enough to be T4 right now. The lead is Andrew Novak, who also shot 68 today. He is in the house at 7 under par. So Hadwin, when you look at the clubhouse lead, he is sitting there just a couple of shots off the pace of Novak at 5 under par, and Novak is the clubhouse leader at 7 under. As for some other Canadians, where I mentioned Will Bateman, and you're thinking, Will Bateman? Well, there's 21 Canadians in this event, right? We see it every year. You get more opportunities for Canadian players to play in the PGA Tour. It's one of the benefits of having it, right? He is 7-under through 12 holes today. 5-under for the tournament. So he's becoming a story. Corey Connors, who was one of the day one leaders at 5-under par, he will tee it up in less than an hour. 110 is when he's going to be on the tee. So really good Canadian content so far. Taylor Pendrith is still on the courts. He's given a few back, though, unfortunately, but he's 2-under still for the event. So we'll keep you posted on the Canadian Open as well, as long as what's going on here at the Marshes. I guess, Creature, we should, Steve Lloyd and Graham Creature with you, by the way. Creature's producing and co-hosting back at 87 George Street. We should maybe keep going back to what's become a big story here. News broke at around 11 this morning when Bruce Garriott threw it out there that Steve Apostolopoulos says that he is out of the bidding process for the Senators. He has grown frustrated with it. But there's a bit of a hedge there. It's like he could be talked back into it, I guess, because, as we say, there are no rules with this process. But as we continue to hash this out, Graham, listen, sometimes it is exactly what it looks like. If Apostolopoulos has been the highest bid, and that has been reported many times, that is the thinking, he has had the highest bid so far to this process. If that's true, then it would stand to reason maybe he's getting sick and tired of being used as a stalking horse to get the other bids up. He says, and it might be, are you taking my bid or not? Are we bleep or get off the pot? Because I'm not staying in just for you to drive price and other people. It might be that simple, right?
Yeah, it could be. Obviously, lots of things at play, and I don't know. It could be an option for sure.
All right. Well, thoughts on any of that? Keep them coming in here, and you continue to pour them in. Tangle says basically they want the bidders to eat the debt, which is probably massive. Well, yeah, of course, that's going to be a part of the sale. But as much debt as there is with the team, if it's going to be pushing $1 billion, there's still money to be made for the estate and for the Melnick daughters. It's not like it's all eaten up here, right? There's enough equity that this is, everybody's going to do quite well on both sides of this here whenever the sale process comes to an end. But anyways, if you're just joining us, that's kind of the news that broke a little bit earlier in the show. So we'll take your thoughts on that. Continue to send them in here. The other news from this morning, in the NHL, the Columbus Blue Jackets continue to be very active. Damon Severson is now a member of the Jackets. It was a sign-and-trade deal. He has signed an 8-year, $6.25 million extension. That's per season. With the Devils, and then they traded him in the sign-and-trade just for a third-round pick to the Jackets. So Severson is now a Jacket. Provorov's there as well. Babcock's coming in as coach. So the Jackets continue to make a lot of noise, and there's still word that they could be in and trying to get Kevin Hayes from the Philadelphia Flyers, if the Flyers are willing to eat a little bit of money. So we've had news on that front pretty much every day except yesterday. I wonder why that was. Oh, that's because there was a game. And we touched on that earlier in the show, but the Florida Panthers got back into the series in a game, really, that they weren't in for the longest time. Didn't feel like they had any hope. And they found a way. And now, though, you got to wonder about the injury situation. So maybe we'll touch on that next, Graham, because we didn't really get into it. We had some interviews come our way. And it's great that we got a series because we just want to see more hockey. But, man, the way the Panthers won last night, Vegas still looks so good. And the Panthers looks like they got nicked up even more with a couple of key guys that toughed it out to play in last night's game. So we'll touch on that next as well as we continue live from the Marshes here at the Sens Alumni Golf Tournament on In the Box on TSN 1200.
Now back to In the Box on TSN 1200.
Eddie waited till he finished high school. He went to Hollywood, got a tattoo. He met a girl out there with a tattoo too. The future was wide open.
I should do play-by-play of what's happening right here. Come on, are you, Are you a rookie? Hey, come on. You've done this a few million times.
I need alcohol.
All right. Do I have to say who it is? Everybody, do I even need to say who's our guest here?
That probably gave it away.
Yeah, right, maybe. It's Liam McGuire. Good to see you. How are you?
Hey. Fantastic, Lloydie.
Hey, great to see you in an event like this in the Sens Alumni Golf Tournament and first assist and soldier on. And listen, you MC all kinds of hockey events, you know, all across this country, all across, you've been around the world doing this. The pandemic has kind of cut that in, cut that down. Yeah. What's it like to be back at events? Because you love it. Like, you just love being at events like this, and what's it mean to you to be at a great event like this?
Well, first of all, the Sens alumni, and, you know, John Barrett's here today. Freddie, his brother's having a few health issues, but still with us. God love him. And Brad Marsh, who now heads up the Philadelphia Flyer alumni. But Freddie and Johnny and Marshy, in the mid-90s there, when they started all this, and there's some guys here today, like Frank St. Marseille's in the group in front of us. You know, this guy played in 3 Stanley Cup finals, had 2 hat tricks in the playoffs. That's a very small number of guys who did that. Mm. And they are such an incredible group. Lori Boschman, as you know, Lloyd, he heads them up now. And it's just, they do a fantastic job. And I am lucky. I do speak for many other alumni. In fact, I'm doing an event in Detroit next week.
Okay.
And it's I'll be there for 3 days. And it's an incredible opportunity for me personally to go back and see the guys who created the history that I grew up either watching or loving or you know, have followed, whether it was before my time or during my time or it's come after my time. It's just a tremendous opportunity. So it means the world to me. And the Sens alumni are do a fantastic job.
And what's it mean to you, speaking of history, and nobody sinks their teeth into the history of hockey like you do, and growing up like a Montreal Canadiens fan. But you're from here. This is home. This has always been home.
Yeah,
we're coming up on 31 years since opening night. There's history, you know, with the alumni. And you talk about the early days, and you know, awesome that it got going. But now that we've come along here, we've had so many former players.
Yeah.
That have come through, and they've been Senators. They've laid roots here. They have families here.
Yeah.
And they stayed here. And we have more of that now. It's awesome to see, and that just takes time, and now we've got enough time behind us now.
It does. I mean, that was a unique thing in the early days with Marshy, because he had that first season with Ottawa, right?
Yep.
In 92-93.
The Renfrew fan club.
Renfrew fan club were outstanding. I mean, how do you beat Renfrew anyway? It's one of the greatest towns in the valley. I mean, just makes you want to think about the Shady Lady Disco, taking the portage over to the RVI and all
Here
sorts
we
of other
go.
Stories. I'll shut that down right now. But, I mean, you're 100% right. I mean, look at, for example, I'm doing a short hot stove tonight with Chris Phillips and Chris Neal. Guys got their numbers retired. They played their entire career here. Neal, over 1,000 games. Chris Phillips, most games. Chris Neal, NHL record for most penalty minutes on one team only in NHL history, 2,522. Chris Phillips, 1,179 games. This is significant stuff. This isn't just let's honor or let's remember or let's have these guys come out because they wore a jersey. These guys did significant things when they were here. Stanley Cup final, Stanley Cup semifinal. Not everybody can win a cup. You know, it's so difficult. We know. But when these guys accomplished what they did and to have so many others, that's why I think Bosch, you know, first captain, now the president of the alumni. And, I mean, and he's in the record books as well, right? Winnipeg Jets, 630 goal scorers, 85. Like, he's one of those guys. I mean, this is the thing. It's dripping in history out here, Lloydie, today. You could go down, and there's so many guys. Look at a guy like Randy Robitaille. He's the guy who broke Brian Boucher's shutout streak. He's here today.
Yep.
He's a member of the Center alumni. Like, this is the kind of stuff that's out here, and it's rampant. It's everywhere. Sean Rivers. Take a guy like Sean Rivers, never really, you know, got a cup of coffee, but here he is, the only guy, only hockey guy, to play with Manon Rion and Gordie Howe in the same game. Only guy. And you know, because of the circumstances that surrounded it during those games in the IHL with the Vipers and the exhibition game that Manon played in. Anyways, it's just dripping in history. I love it. I'm thrilled to be a part of it. I'm very thankful they asked me to come back to do it, and I'm just jacked up, man.
I can't tell.
You're a beauty, Liam.
That's Creature back at the station.
Hey, Creech, how's he going, buddy?
Oh, she's going better now. You find a quart out there at the marshes or what?
There's no quarts, but I'm drilling back the pints. Like, they gave us 15 beer tickets, so I'm
oh, no.
Yeah,
yeah. Oh,
I don't know what the other guys are using.
All right, before we cut you to they're waiting on you, real quick, give us your thoughts on the Stanley Cup Final and how things played out last night. They pulled one out of the fire, didn't they?
Well, my bracket got busted right out of the gate when the Panthers came back, and it was just unbelievable when you saw Kolesar hit to Chuck, and then when they said shoulder, I said, come on. He was on, you know, he was walking on eggs when he got up, and then he comes back, and you could see the crowd almost rallied behind when he showed up on the bench. Then he comes out. Are you kidding me? What was it 203, 213 to go? They pull the goalie, they tie it up, and it's him. And then, I mean, the OT goal, I don't know. Hey, Hill, maybe a little screen. But, I mean, yeah, man, they're back in it. They're going to be a tough out. They do so many things, Lloydy and Creech. They do so many things, little passes. You know, it's just the confidence that they have in the ozone that you've seen that has put them in good stead through all three rounds. I have called them out in all three rounds. Obviously, who called them to beat Boston? Nobody. I mean, the Leafs, the entire Leaf Nation thought this was their year, just like 2 years ago, till the Habs waxed them down 3-1. And then Carolina said, there's no way. There's no way you're beating Carolina. It's one of the top offensive teams in the league. But Carolina's just too damn pretty, man. They're too damn pretty. Like, you can't do it, Brent Burns and Chatfield. You got to get some guys. You're going to get busy out there. And they got eaten alive by Florida. And I said that on the air on TSN 1200. They're going to get eaten alive. And now they're doing it again. They're not going to go quietly in the night. And I love it. I mean, look, Bruce Cassidy's been a longtime friend. So I'm pulling for Butch. I'm not going to hide any about that. I'm pulling for Butch all the way. And they are the better team. But they got a shot back in the head last night. And I'll tell you, just like it was no cover at the shot on Wednesday in 78, baby. He took a shot back. That's the way it went.
All right. Get out of here. Good to see you. Hey,
all right.
Okay.
Sorry,
the passion. I love it. That's good stuff.
G'day.
It's just like we got a B12 shot for the tail end of the show here. That's good. Liam McGuire, he'll be emceeing a little bit later on with 15 beer tickets for now available. If you have any left over, maybe send them his way as well. Okay. The passion this guy has for hockey is unmatched. That's one text. God bless Liam. Another one that comes in here as well. Oh, man. Okay. Lots of fun. Creature, why don't we take a break? We need a reset after that because Goody's going to join us coming up on our next segment.
I need a cigarette after that.
I need a cigarette. Cigarette, all of it. Gord Wilson's going to slide by next in his usual 1 o'clock slot here on the show on Fridays on In the Box, live from the Marshes at the Sens Alumni Tournament on TSN 1200.